So a couple of months ago, I was doing my grandparent duty in watching one of my grandchildren, Owen, who is 4 years old. And Owen is a really active four-year-old. He's not the kind of kid that likes to sit around and just read books, if you know what I mean. And at this time, a couple months ago, it was still pretty cold out, so I couldn't take him outside to kind of blow off a little bit of energy with him. So we had to focus on doing things in the house. And he came up to me and he said, "Hey, I got a good idea. How about if we build something with blocks?" And so he gets out the Jenga game, which is those little long blocks, and he goes, "You build me a tower." And I'm like, "Okay, I can do that." And if some of you who know me know my competitive nature, I don't like to do things halfway, even if it is building blocks with Jenga blocks, right? So I'm building the Taj Mahal of Jenga blocks, right? The tower of all towers. And right when I'm about to put the last couple of blocks on the top of the tower, I hear a small little pickup truck come screaming through the living room right into my tower. And the thing just blows up everywhere, right? I could tell who the culprit was because I heard him laughing across the room. I kind of had an idea who it was. And I need to admit to you that at first I was upset. I was like, "What's the deal? You asked me to build a tower. So I built this nice, beautiful tower, and you just wrecked it." You see, we weren't exactly on the same page. See, we didn't really communicate what the tower was for. He had one idea. I had another idea. He asked me to build another tower. I said, "Okay, I can do that." But all of a sudden, I noticed that my perception and my attitude about the building were a little bit different now, right? I wasn't going to put as much effort into building a Taj Mahal of Jenga blocks because I knew what it was for. I knew that it was eventually going to get knocked down. Owen and I spent probably 2 hours building towers and knocking them down, and we had a great, great time. But I need to admit to you, 2 hours is kind of a long time to be building towers, knocking them down, and rebuilding them. It got kind of monotonous. It seemed at the end like, you know, this is getting kind of old. What's the purpose of this? Just simple entertainment? You know, I got to thinking about that. And it's hard to say, but it kind of reminds me of how at times I've managed my own family. No plan, lack of communication in what the goal is, what we're building. And then at times when the thing comes crashing down, it's confusing. It's like, "What are you doing? What's going on? Why did you do that?" And it just seems like time after time we're building towers and knocking them down and building towers and knocking them down, and it gets monotonous. And there are and have been many times where I've just looked at family and thought, "You know what? It has no purpose. This is crazy. Why are we doing what we're doing? It just seems so monotonous. It just seems like there's no purpose. It seems like we're building towers all the time, and when they come crumbling down, we rebuild the tower. Why is that? Why do we do that?" Well, it's the same thing that I had with Owen. Part of our problem is we don't really clearly communicate what our goals are. And because of that, we operate on a daily basis without any real clear strategy. Or maybe we haven't really shared our priorities or our objectives for what we're doing and what we're not going to do. And we just kind of take things as they come and we deal with them. And life gets so frantic and so chaotic that we just at times want to just say, "Forget it, this is crazy." And sometimes we don't even stop to assess what we're doing and why. Does your family ever feel like that? I know mine does. At times it can feel like out of control. And I wonder, how in the world can I do this in a way that is healthy? You know, the sink is filled with dishes. The laundry room is exploding with clothes. The weeds are taking over my lawn. The kids have practice, and maybe you're trying to remember, whose turn was it to go pick up which kid again? You know, and in the monotony and the chaos of your day, you forget, oh man, I forgot to take something out for supper. Well, maybe we'll just go to McDonald's, but you don't want to go to McDonald's because you didn't have time to exercise, so you decide to go to Subway. And your kids hate Subway, so you make two stops. You go to Subway and to McDonald's, and you bring it home. And at the end of the day, you're so tired, you climb into the bed that you forgot to make in the morning. And then you do it all over again and again and again. It's not just your family. It's my family. It's everyone's family. I mean, I don't even have three or four kids running around my house anymore, and it still seems chaotic like that and frantic. So what do we do? How do we do this? Well, today we're starting a new message series called Home Builders. And we're going to be looking at biblical and practical things that we can do to help our frantic families. Today we're going to discuss the floor plan. Because if you're going to build something, even if it's like a Jenga tower, you should have a plan. And especially we should have a plan if it's about building our home or building our family. And if you're going to do that the right way, you need to start with a plan or a blueprint. You know, how crazy is it to say that if you're going to go out and build a new house, you don't just go out there and start building it, do you? No, you have a plan. You put a blueprint together because you want to know what it's going to look like before you start. And yet many of us, we get married and we start a family, and we never really start with the right blueprint. We never really have a plan for what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And 10, 15 years later, we're scratching our head going, what? This is just, what are we doing? How are we doing this? We just live moment by moment, day by day. And before we know it, it's been 10 or 12 years, and we're building and knocking down and rebuilding and wondering why. So I want to take a look at what Jesus has to say about building our families. Now, we just got through with a message series called Traitors, and we looked at what it means to be a disciple who follows Jesus and what Jesus expects from us as far as going out into the world and sharing and helping others. And now we're moving into this new message series called Home Builders, and we're going to look at what it means to be a disciple inside your home, because both of them are very important. We can't neglect either one of them. And so we're going to look at what Jesus says about the cost of discipleship and how it connects into building our families. If you have your Bibles this morning, turn to Luke chapter 14. I'm going to read from starting at verse 25. If you don't have a Bible with you this morning, I encourage you to bring one so that you can read it from your own Bible and have the opportunity to mark notes down or anything like that. If you don't have one, that's fine. We'll have it on the screen for you as well. This is what Jesus says. A large crowd was following Jesus. He turned around and said to them, "If you want to be my disciple, you must hate everyone else by comparison. Your father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even your own life. Otherwise, you can't be my disciple. And if you do not carry your own cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. Don't begin until you count the cost. For who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there is enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone would laugh at you. They would say, 'There is a person who started that building and couldn't afford to finish it.' Or, what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether his army of 10,000 could defeat the 20,000 soldiers marching against him? If he can't, he will send a delegation to discuss terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. So you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything that you own. Salt is good for seasoning. But if it loses its flavor, how do you make it salty again? Flavorless. Salt is good neither for the soil or for the manure pile. It's thrown away. Anyone with ears to hear should listen and understand. Wow. What a great way to start a message series on family, right? Jesus says, hey, if you want to be one of my disciples, you need to hate your family. What? What's that all about? That's kind of crazy, isn't it? If you want to be a disciple, if you want to love Jesus, you need to hate your family? Let's look at that for a minute. Because Jesus is a master at challenging his disciples by creating tension. Now, you need to admit, if you were listening to Jesus for the first time and he said something like that, it would get your attention, wouldn't it? And create some sort of tension within you. Wow, how can I do that? How can I hate my family and love Jesus? And how do they both interact? How does it work? That's a strong word. We're surprised to hear Jesus use a word like that, especially when it's connected to family. You see, Jesus creates this tension by sharing the ideal. This is what it means to be perfect. This is what it means, and this is what I expect you to do. This is what it means to be a disciple or a follower of Jesus. It means to have a perfect standard, to be able to achieve this if you want to be my disciple. Jesus often talks about being a part of the kingdom of heaven. And a lot of times he'll say, if you want to be a part of the kingdom of heaven, if you want to be a disciple, you need to do this or to be like this. So he creates this ideal. But he doesn't stop there. Sometimes Jesus even creates more tension by including us in some of the difficulty. Like this, for example. Jesus says, you have heard it said, do not murder. But I tell you this. Anyone who is angry at another person for no reason at all is subject to judgment. Whoa. You see what he did? Do not murder. Oh, I'm okay. I haven't really killed anybody physically. But Jesus takes it to another level. And he says, but if you're angry with another person for no reason at all, you may be subject to judgment. He goes on to say this. Do not commit adultery. You have heard that said before. Do not commit adultery. And again, the people who are hearing it are probably thinking, I'm good with that one too. But he says, but I say this. Anyone who looks lustfully at another person has already committed adultery with them in their heart. Hard to hear, isn't it? What Jesus does is all of a sudden, he includes everyone as guilty. He sets up an ideal. This is the standard that I expect. The problem with that is when we look at that, we think to ourselves, man, Jesus, that's just not achievable. I can't do that. There's an incredible gap between reality in which I live and the ideal which you ask me to live up to. I can't do that. And in the midst of that, what we do sometimes in our culture today is we give up. We say, you know what? That's too hard for me. I can't do what it takes to meet your ideal, Jesus. I can't do it. And we lower our standards. So instead of relying on God's grace and forgiveness, we try to achieve our own righteousness by changing the rules a little bit so that we look okay, so that we feel better about ourselves. But here's the thing. We don't need to do that. See, all throughout the Bible, what Jesus does is he shares the ideal. Here's what I expect. Here's what you need to look towards. Here's what you need to desire. But I also recognize that you're sinful, broken people and that you're going to fail and you're going to fall short. So when you do fail and fall short, I'm going to give you grace. I'm going to love you anyway, right where you're at. Just a beautiful story in the Gospels is the woman who was caught in adultery, right? in the act. No question about it. She is guilty. And the Pharisees drag her to Jesus and say, Jesus, our law says that she deserves death. She deserves to be stoned. What do you say? And Jesus says, hey, whoever's without sin can be the first one to throw the stone. And one by one they leave. And Jesus turns and he looks at her and he says, where are those who are condemning you? They're not here. And Jesus says beautiful words. He says, and then neither do I condemn you. But he doesn't leave it that way. He says, now go and sin no more. In other words, what Jesus is saying is, I have this incredible ideal. If you want to live a healthy spiritual life, this is what you need to strive for. But I also recognize that since you're sinful and broken people, that there's a huge gap there between reality and my ideal. But I'm willing to forgive you and love you right where you're at and help you strive for what is unachievable by relying on my grace. You see, Jesus isn't saying to go and just do whatever we feel like it and rely on his grace. That would be cheap grace. That would be taking advantage of him. There would be no relationship there. What Jesus is saying is, you know, I understand you're broken. I understand you're going to make mistakes, but don't give up. Pursue me. Pursue the ideal that I've called you to. And I will help you along the way. So how does it connect with our families? Because I think a lot of times we can kind of do that in our families. We recognize God's ideal for us and our families, but sometimes we look at it and we go, that's just not reality. That's not the reality that I live in. I fail too many times. I'm broken too much and I can't achieve that. So sometimes we create our own little reality. We make our own rules so that we feel better about our dysfunction in our family. And we just leave it that way. But God doesn't desire for us and our families to leave it that way. He has something better for us. And he comes to us and he says, look, as families, I want you to strive for the ideal and rely on my grace to help you, to forgive you, to love you, to grow your family. So the question for all of us today is, are we willing to embrace God's ideal standards, his truth for us individually and for our family, and work at them even though we know it's unattainable, that we're going to fail, we're going to fall short? Or, on the flip side, are we going to make the decision to or be tempted to stay where we're at, be dysfunctional, and kind of make that our normal and deal with it? I'm saying today that God is calling us not to live in this area, to rely on his grace, his forgiveness, and his love to grow our families so that they can be healthy, to strive for God's ideal for who we are called to do and to be. And that's what discipleship is all about. You see, God is calling you to be a disciple, to follow him. And what it means to be a disciple is to be someone who follows someone else so they can learn everything that they can from them and then take what they've learned and teach someone else. That's what a disciple is. So you are called to be a disciple, to sit at Jesus' feet and to learn everything that you can about what it means to be a godly person, what it means to follow Jesus. And then you're to take that and bring it into your family and teach your spouse and your children about what it means to be a disciple, so that someday they can pass that on to the next generation. I don't know any family here who wants to remain dysfunctional. I think everybody here has a passion to grow your family, to be healthy and spiritual, and to live by what God's ideal is for you. So the question is, are we going to be that kind of a disciple? Are we going to make the decision to be a disciple who disciples our family and helps them to grow so that they can pass on their faith to the next generation and do the same thing. See, the best way forward is to embrace that tension. See, we're not very comfortable with tension, are we? Living between God's ideal and the reality that we're broken and messed up and dysfunctional. And so what we do as families a lot of times is when there's tension, we kind of back away and let it go instead of working through it or working at it. And that's what Jesus wants us to do. See, Jesus is never uncomfortable with that tension because he knows we're broken. But he wants to help us in the process. So being a disciple is at the heartbeat, is the heartbeat of what it means to build a healthy spiritual family. It's the foundational aspect that will help build your spiritual house and family. Jesus goes on in this story in the Bible to share three short parables. And so when I looked at these parables, I thought, you know what, I can connect them into very practical ways that can help you disciple and manage your families, that will help you to grow so that you can pass on the discipleship and the spiritual legacy that you want to live and pass on. So here's the first thing that Jesus says is, hey, count the cost before you begin. Being a disciple means counting the cost before you start. So Jesus says if you're going to build something, you better count the cost first because you don't want to look foolish if you can't complete it. It's Jesus' way of saying you have to know how much it's going to cost and how you're going to get there in order to finish the task. See, counting the cost is about beginning with the end in mind. You establish a goal based on what your values are, and then you develop a strategy on how you're going to get there. How am I going to invest my time and my energy in order to achieve that goal? And Jesus is saying that as a disciple, the cost is great. It's an investment. But as individual disciples and people who are called to disciple their families, we need to count the cost. And that means we need to begin with the end in mind. What do we want our families to look like? And how are we going to get there? See, part of our problem as disciples is we desire to have great families, but we really haven't communicated our goals. Matter of fact, we probably don't even have goals. I never had goals. I never had anyone sit down with me before I got married and say, this is what you need to do as a family. You need to consistently have some sort of goal as a family. What are your goals? You know, how are you going to achieve your goals? So, because we don't do that, it becomes chaotic. And we often find ourselves frantic, right? We feel like we're building the tower, and then somebody comes along and wrecks it. And so we rebuild it, and it gets monotonous. So my question for you today, and a very practical thing that you can do, is I want to ask you, what are your goals? What are your goals as a family? Have you counted the cost of what it looks like to be a disciple and how you're going to disciple your family? If you haven't, then you have no goals. If you don't have any goals, you have nothing to achieve. And that's how we fall into the frantic, chaotic lifestyle. So if you really want to build your family and leave a successful spiritual legacy that you can pass on to your children, the first thing that I want to challenge you to do is to create family goals. What do we want it to look like? How do we want to achieve? Here's two questions that you can wrestle with when creating your family goals, and I've got them up there this morning. First one is, what are your core values? What do you see in your family right now? What do you value in your family right now? And what are some values that you need to focus on? The second one is, what is your strategy? What will drive how we live and operate our families? These are like two or three very purposeful decisions that you need to make on a regular basis. So that's the first thing, right? We need to create family goals, find out what our core values are, and develop a strategy for how we're going to implement them in our family. See, Jesus wants us to finish well. He's just not pounding on us and saying, you have to count the cost and make a decision whether or not you're going to follow me. Right? He wants us to finish well. So counting the cost of being a disciple for Jesus in your family means developing some goals based on core values. Develop a strategy that you can achieve that. Here's the second one. Develop a battle plan while your enemy is far away. So Jesus shares a story of the king, and he said, what king wouldn't wrestle with his plan for battle before the enemy comes, right? If I've only got 10,000 people in my army and he's got 20,000, then it's really probably too late when they're knocking on our door, right? Ready to attack. We're in trouble. And a lot of times, isn't that what we do in our family? Like, we just kind of put out fires as they pop up in our family. We attack things when all of a sudden it feels like we're attacked. When the tower crashes, we rebuild it. Well, aren't there ways that we can prevent the tower from crashing on a regular basis? And that's exactly what Jesus is talking about here. While the enemy is still far away, while chaos and the building hasn't collapsed yet, have a plan. Wow, that's brilliant, isn't it? It really isn't that hard. It's kind of simple. What is our plan? And what do we need to do to achieve the plan? And yet, like I said, many of us get married and we go into our families and we don't even have a plan. And we wonder how the building crashed and what happened. Life is difficult. There's a lot of enemies out there. There's a lot of things out there that can happen that are trying to destroy your family. How are you going to keep that from happening? What do you need to do? See, the thing about war is when it happens, it automatically becomes a main priority, right? Everything else kind of gets put on the back burner because you need to defend. So why not take that concept and flip it around and say, let's make something a different priority. Let's make something healthy in our life that can be a priority. If we want to be a disciple who builds a family that leaves a spiritual legacy, then we need to have a battle plan. So the first thing we talked about doing as a family was to develop some goals. The second practical thing that I want to ask you and challenge you to do is to rally around a top priority for at least the next 2 to 6 months. What is it on your calendar? What's going on in your family in the next 2 to 6 months that you need to look at and develop as the top priority? What is the number one thing that you need to focus on? You need to figure that out. How are you going to do that? Two different ways. First, you need to eliminate distractions. You need to make a list of the things that are going to prevent you from rallying around your top priority. Get rid of some of the things that you don't need to do. And then define some objectives. Make a list of responsibilities that you need to add or pay attention to in order to achieve your top priority. Again, this isn't rocket science. It's not really difficult. It's something simple that you can do to help you focus on getting your family to grow towards what Jesus says is the ideal. We know it's going to be difficult. We know that Jesus has a high priority and a high cost on being a disciple. It's even more so in our families. But Jesus teaches that a disciple will develop a battle plan before the enemy or before problems come about. He wants you to be successful as a parent and as a family. Jesus wants you to be able to pass on a spiritual legacy to your children and to your grandchildren. And he wants to help you do that. But you need to develop a plan and have a top priority with objectives to achieve it. Here's the third one. Jesus says, be salty. Be salty. You see, in Jesus' day, salt was used mostly as a preservative and sometimes as a purifying agent, an antiseptic for killing infection. And our modern-day salt doesn't kind of lose its flavor like that, like it did back then. But back then, like Jesus said, if it loses its flavor, it's absolutely useless. It's thrown out and be trampled on. It's no good at all. What Jesus is trying to say here is you need to be a person of impact. You need to be salty. You need to have a lasting impact on the world. The first place that you need to focus on is your family. Parents, are we being salty? in raising our children? Are we having a spiritual impact on our children? How are we doing that? See, to be like salt as a disciple means to consistently keep the truth of God pure, to preserve it, and to teach it to our children. That's the most important place for us, to be disciples. So as disciples who desire to lead and to build our families, we're often not very consistent, are we? At least I don't feel like I'm very consistent. I can feel like family is like a roller coaster at times, and my spiritual life can be like a roller coaster. You know, at times I might even had some short-term goals and some objectives, and it just seems like, you know, they kind of fade away. The busyness of life kind of drags us away from our goal. So how do we keep that from happening? Well, remember, the first thing we could do is develop goals with core strategy and core values and a strategy. The second thing is to develop a plan to rally around a top priority and eliminate distractions, develop some ongoing responsibilities. And the last challenge for us is if we want to be salty, we need to communicate clearly and consistently with our families. Again, this isn't rocket. It's not a really tough thing, is it? It's really simple. And yet we don't do it on a regular basis. Here's how we can achieve that. Two different ways. First is to have a weekly family meeting. 15 to 20 minutes tops. Just to regularly assess your progress and your goals. And where you're headed. Just to communicate. Again, this is what we're about. This is what we're trying to do. Here's where we're headed. This is what we need to do. Clear and easy and simple. The next thing that you should do is visibly display your goals and your plan where family members can see it on a regular basis. So they're reminded, oh yeah, that's right. Here's the purpose of our family. Here's what we're doing the next 2 to 6 months. This is where we're going. This is where we're headed. And it kind of reminds you on a regular basis of what you need to do, what you need to not do in order to achieve that goal. You see, it's great to have goals and a plan as a family. But if you don't evaluate and assess, it just disappears and you won't be successful. Jesus wants us to be salty disciples who pursue a spiritual legacy and pass it on to our children. So being a disciple is tough. But I believe being a disciple is inextricably linked to family. As parents, we're called to be disciples who disciple. How are we going to achieve that? How are we going to do that? We need to have a plan to build our family. Being a disciple of Jesus is about counting the cost, developing a battle plan, and doing what it takes to stay salty. So make the choice today to pursue God's ideal for family. And when you fall short, and when you fail, rely on His grace, His love, and forgiveness. Get back up and keep moving in His direction. Let's pray together. Lord, thank You for Your grace. And thank You for Your unconditional love and Your mercy that is new every morning. God, it just is incredible that You love us that much. To give us Your truth and have high expectations for us, but that You're also willing to forgive and give us grace when we fall and when we fail. So much so that You left heaven and You came here and gave Your life so that we don't have to rely on ourselves to be good or righteous, but that we can put our faith and trust in You and what You've done for us. Help us to be disciples who passionately pursue You in order to disciple our families and leave a spiritual legacy that will last. In Jesus' name, amen. At this time,